Listening Library presents The Celery Stalks at Midnight by James Howe. Read by Victor Garber with special commentary by James Howe.
To my father, who raised me on a diet of corn, ham, and Punster cheese. Editor's note. Having been in the publishing business for many years, there is little left to surprise me. I have, as Harold puts it in his new book, come to expect the unexpected. So I wasn't surprised in the least to receive a phone call recently from a well-known literary agent asking me to take a look at a new client's book. Business as usual, I thought. Imagine my amazement upon receipt of the manuscript and following note to discover just who her new client was. Dear Ed, the author wrote familiarly. I hope you won't think I've gone Hollywood, but my friend Chester convinced me that with this, my third book, I should hire an agent. After all, he counseled me, who's going to handle all those requests that will undoubtedly pour in for your personal appearances on the Today Show, the Tonight Show, and Animal Kingdom? And who will watch over your editor to make sure he treats you with the respect due the most famous canine author since Eric Beagle? I hope you will forgive the latter comment, as I have had no complaints with your treatment of me thus far, and anticipate only the best in our continued relationship. Nonetheless, I have engaged the services of a literary agent who will deliver these pages to you. For this and other services, I am sure she will be worth her weight in dog biscuits. Once again, I do hope you will view publication of my work favorably. Yours sincerely, Harold X. I gazed out the window next to my desk and watched a new skyscraper being erected nearby. There's no stopping progress, I mused. With a sigh, I turned my attention back to Harold's manuscript. I would miss his familiar, bedraggled figure appearing unannounced at my door, his latest effort clenched between his teeth. To think that Harold, of all writers, should have hired an agent. It was with a heavy heart, indeed, that I began to read the manuscript entitled The Celery Stalks at Midnight. But it was not long before I forgot everything, save the harrowing story that unfolded in the pages therein. It is a story that dares to ask the question, when the moon is up and the night creatures begin to stir, who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of lettuce? For the answer, read on. The Celery Stalks at Midnight. Chapter 1. The Disappearance. It was not a dark and stormy night. Indeed, there was nothing in the elements to foreshadow the events that lay ahead. Chester, Howie, and I were gathered on the front porch for a bit of post-dinner snoozing. I was stretched out on my back, my paws dangling at my sides, thinking of nothing more than the meal I'd just eaten and the chocolate treat I hoped might still lie ahead. After all, it was Friday night, the one night of the week Toby was allowed to stay up to read as late as he wanted. And that meant snacks. Snacks to be shared with his old pal, Harold. That's me. Chester, curled up on an open comic book nearby, purred contentedly. Only Howie, who was growling as he chewed vigorously on a rawhide bone, seemed unable to relax. But all that high-strung energy was natural, I suppose, considering he was still just a puppy.
"Boy, this is the life, huh, Uncle Harold?"
Howie asked between growls. I replied, with as much vigor as I could muster, which wasn't much. After all, I wasn't a puppy anymore, and had used up most of my energy long ago. I listened to the sound of children playing down the block somewhere.
"There's nothing like hanging out on the porch after a good meal," Howie went on enthusiastically.
He lifted his quivering nostrils to the air and sniffed rapidly.
"Ah, smell that night air. What's that? Somebody's having a, what do you call it? What is it when they cook outside, Pop?"
Chester raised an eyelid. A barbecue, he said with a yawn.
Oh, yeah. Gee, I have so much to learn. But you and Uncle Harold have taught me a lot already.
He gazed admiringly at Chester.
Thanks, Pop, he said.
Chester raised his other eyelid and shook his head. He turned his gaze from Howie to me. Why does the kid insist on calling me Pop? He asked. I'm not his father. I'm not even a dog. If anyone around here should be his Pop, it should be you, Harold. Dogs of a feather should stick together and all that. Howie chuckled.
That's a good one, Pop. Dogs of a feather. I'll have to remember that one.
I didn't even attempt to answer Chester's question. After all, Chester, who doesn't hold dogs in particularly high regard, did seem an odd choice of a father figure for a young pup. But Howie, who had recently come to live with us, had formed his attachment right away, and there was no breaking him of it now.
Too bad the rabbit can't come out here, too, Howie went on with a nod toward the living room. It's not fair, his having to be cooped up inside that cage all the time.
I'm afraid that's a rabbit's fate, I said, at least for a domesticated one. Though I must agree with you, Howie, I feel sorry for Benicula, too. Save your sympathy, Chester muttered. Benicula is no ordinary rabbit, if he ever got out. And let's not forget that once upon a time he did, Harold. He'd only stir up trouble. Are you still convinced? I started to say, but stopped myself, not wanting to alarm young Howie with Chester's theories of Benicula's true identity. Chester looked mildly surprised. Of course I am, he replied. Can there be any doubt? You saw the evidence yourself, Harold. Howie looked back and forth from Chester to me.
What are you two talking about? He asked.
Oh, nothing, nothing. I thought of the cuddly little bunny rabbit who'd become my friend, of the hours we'd spent snuggling in front of crackling fires on cold winter nights, of the time I'd saved him from Chester's attempt to starve him to death. That rabbit is a vampire, Chester said matter-of-factly. Howie's head jerked up. The rawhide bone tumbled down the front steps.
What? A vampire?
He gasped. Then, after a moment's reflection, he asked,
What's a vampire?
I felt obliged to step in and save Howie from the seamier effects of life. A vampire, I explained, is the person who calls the rules during a baseball game. Don't confuse the kid, Chester said, bathing a paw, and don't be such a Pollyanna. Turning to Howie, he said, A vampire is a creature, once dead, who sucks the blood out of other living beings in order to live. Howie's eyes widened in amazement.
What?
He stammered. So far, our friend Benicula hasn't attacked people, Chester went on calmly, or cats or dogs, for that matter. But he has drained the juices out of vegetables, turning them ghostly white. He came to live with us when our family... One night, the Monroes went to the movies, I said, picking up the story, and found Benicula lying in a dirt-filled box on one of the seats. Don't forget which movie, Chester interjected. Dracula, I conceded. But that doesn't mean nonsense. In this case, everything means something. Don't you think it's significant that shortly after Benicula's arrival, the vegetables in the kitchen started turning white? And wasn't it strange that they did so during the night, the only time Benicula wasn't asleep? Wasn't it stranger still that he could get out of his cage by his own powers without even undoing the lock? And what about those marks found in the drained vegetables? Two tiny holes that matched up perfectly with the rabbit's oddly spaced teeth, or should I say, fangs. I know, I said impatiently. We've been through all this before, but I'm still not convinced. Nothing will ever convince you, Harold. I wouldn't be surprised if that bunny's got you in his powers. Listen, Howie.
Yes, Pop.
Chester rolled his eyes and went on. You can't listen to Harold on this one. He's too much of a goody-two-shoes. And the Monroes, well, what can I say? People are, alas, people, and as such, woefully in the dark much of the time. They never had a clue what was going on. I was on the verge of destroying the vampire bunny once and for all, saving this town and all its inhabitants from his evil clutches, when the Monroes whisked him off to the vet and got him put on a liquid diet. Since then, he's had no need to suck the juices out of vegetables. A blender does all the work for him. Modern technology has once again saved the day. But And here, Chester...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?